Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. It is a Red Men Originals podcast. I am Paul Machin, Chris Page at Chloe Blocks from Dan Club. I've just put a big smile on our face because we've just very briefly spoken to Toffee TV, who are in an absolute terrible place right now.
As bad as Everton's place in the league.
Yeah. Right, Sal. We're going to be talking about Liverpool's win at the weekend. We're going to be talking transfers. We're going to talk on Wataru Endo as well, who obviously signed in the interim period between last week's podcast and this week's podcast. Oh, great playing footy as well. Oh, yeah, look at us. Well, yeah, you did say to me, so on, and we went the game, we nearly wore the same. Chris nearly wore the same.
Now I've seen it on a screen, I can really see it. I couldn't see it in person, but now, yeah, wow.
God. All right,
that's so funny, nearly happened in front of 50,000 people as well.
Yeah, well, it's more now. Sad, yeah, I mean, for those of you listening on the podcast, me and Chris have got the same coloured shorts. Let me see, Traps.
Black Traps. Green shorts.
Yeah, same white souls.
Same outfit. Yeah. Jesus Christ. The Ant and Deck comparisons are going to the moon here, aren't they? We're ready for the next series of I'm a Celebrity. Right, we're going to move on because this is cripplingly embarrassing. Let's just dive into it. Liverpool, speaking of cripplingly embarrassing, Liverpool's first 10-minute performance against Bournemouth, Chris Pajak. So I went back this morning and rewatched the first half an hour just to kind of place it all in my head because people have a tendency to...
Forget the first half an hour of the game.
No, the opposite. Expand like Liverpool crap for X amount of minutes. It's normally like... It gets rounded up or it gets lowered down depending on how people tend to shoot it. In my head, we were terrible for 10 minutes and then we were all right and then we got into the game and it's almost literally like to the minute when Bournemouth have their last, we have our last sort of hairy moment and then we get better. But we were all over the place for the first 10.
We really were. Like, I mean, and the worst part about it, and I sort of talking about this yesterday to somebody, is that for me, Liverpool were poor last season at the start of games, but Liverpool were poor last season at the start of games defensively. Liverpool weren't poor on the ball to a man at the start of games. That's a different problem. And I think it's too easy sometimes for everyone to go, oh, we were poor at the beginning of the game, same as last year. I disagree. I think the end result is the same, but for completely different reasons. So there's no like panic stations that it's just a continuation of the start of last season because we got ourselves out of it. It was horrendous, like absolutely. Absolutely horrendous and completely different to the game against Chelsea where we started so well and then sort of faded out of it. But Trent Alexander-Arnold on the ball was atrocious in the first 10 minutes. Kanate and Trent and their positioning and the talking and between each other, horrendous first 10 minutes. Alisson didn't know whether he was coming or going first 10 minutes. Even Virgil van Dijk, I thought, had an absolutely outstanding game all in. First 10 minutes, I don't think he was very good. And I feel like it was an illusion of confidence from the back four. Like, we're playing with a completely new midfield. I know Gakpo's played there a little bit. All right. But we are playing with a new midfield, essentially. And they're trying to project confidence onto the midfield. And in, when you're projecting something that you're not feeling, it's very obvious. And I felt that was it. I think Liverpool were trying to be too calm in possession. Mm-hmm. And because they were trying to be too calm, they weren't doing the simple things right.
Yeah, I think where the similarities to last season is just us going behind to a team that we're expecting to beat, Dan. You know, we saw that so many times last season. But mm-hmm. I agree with Chris. It was just, it just looked sloppy. It just looked, I don't like lazy, but we didn't look switched on enough. And Alisson's the prime example of that. It just looked like he hadn't warmed up properly, his touch, and it actually loads of guys. The first touch, like Salah has a good opportunity when he's played in and the flag goes up, but it would have been questionable. Alisson a couple of times gets himself into huge trouble. Trent puts himself into bother a couple of times with a bad touch, and thus Liverpool. It was a really, again, sluggish was a word I heard used elsewhere, but that's about the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, sluggish, lackadaisical, not switched on, not at it, all of the above, really. We were nowhere near for the first 10 minutes, and it was disheartening in many ways. And Chris is right to sort of suggest that the actual problems are different than what we've seen last year, but it did. I think we've all come into the season with sort of renewed energy, renewed vigour. And then when you see us struggle for the first 10 minutes of a football match, you go, God, I've seen this before. You know what I mean? Because we've seen it most of last season. So it was a little bit disappointing. But yeah, the touches were so far off. You mentioned a few of them there. Salah's definitely. Trent, obviously, we end up conceding and then conceding again via a bad Trent touch, which isn't like him at all, really. His quality is normally at it, and it just wasn't for any stretch of imagination. And also, there was the moment where Jota gets pretty much in on goal as well, and his touch is off as well. So it's kind of spreading through the team. Nobody to a man kind of or seem capable of settling us and seem capable of getting the foot on the ball and calming us down, and we were all over the place. It's just, and the problem is with that, and Bournemouth hurt us, and it could have hurt us again, of course, but better teams might hurt you time and time again. We could easily be 2-3 nil down by the time we even got into the game, and better teams will come to Anfield and they'll try and do that to us now because they'll have sensed the weakness there. So we need to sort of get rid of that. Like, we did recover, we end up winning the game, of course, but that can't be a trend that continues. That was a problem last year, we couldn't shake it.
Yeah.
That can't be the case again this season.
They came out the blocks, and I thought their game plan was quite brave. And it was interesting because I was listening to the LFC TV commentary, and it was like, I think it was Ronnie Whelan saying, well, we know what Bournemouth are going to do. They're going to sit in, they're going to look to it, it's on the counter attack, and they never. They got in Liverpool's faces from win at one, Chloe, and again, that goes back to it. Whether it's sluggishness or trying to be overcome or whatever, Liverpool just didn't look ready to have a bunch of lads really getting in the face from minute one of the game.
Yeah, we said in the match build-up that this is a manager who likes to play footy, who likes to put teams under pressure. He's going to put his philosophy in place. He's not going to sit there and come to Anfield and be scared. And rightfully so, because we got played off the park for 60 minutes at Chelsea. In my opinion, we did. For the first 30, we were brilliant. And there was things that Bournemouth side would have taken from that and thought, brilliant, we can get at these. And it was almost, and you mentioned there, for different reasons we were all over the place, but it very much still did feel like, get at Liverpool and they'll make their own mistakes. And it did. A minute in, they put it in the back of the net because Trent and Alisson don't command or don't give a shout to anyone. You know, we get away with that. The warning sign was there, and then a minute later we concede because Trent's, you know, playing about with it. And I get what you mean, the first 10 we were horrific for, but I actually thought for the first 30 we were still giving the ball away far too many times. It was trying to be too cute, trying to be too skillful, these passes around the corners, and I was just screaming at them to just do the simple ball, just recycle it, keep hold of it, take the pressure off us, because, you know, Bournemouth still had a couple of counter-attacks on us where they'd, you know, we'd try and do a ball around the corner, you know, be too skillful, we'd lose it, and they'd just drive at us, and we didn't know whether to close down, to engage, to push out, or whether to drop, and they caused us a couple of problems. So I did think it took us 30 minutes until we actually had a real spell of dominance, but yeah, like you said, you can't let that keep happening. That needs to be the example for what doesn't happen. You're also lucky that you were at home for that, because if that's in an away stadium and that happens in the first 5-10 minutes of a game, you're struggling with the atmosphere as well. You've gave them a lift, so we were lucky that we were at home. We had the crowd to absolutely fume at us because the crowd was livid with the way we were playing, and thankfully, you know, we we got ourselves composed, which last year we didn't manage to do a lot of the time.
Just to riff on something that Chloe was saying there, I felt like, you know, we've spoken a lot about this 3-4-3, haven't we, or 3-box-3, however you want to say it. And I felt like Liverpool started with Trent trying to move inside. Obviously, the first one really comes from Trent playing in the middle of the park, doesn't he? And it wasn't. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget that we had a spell of years, a good 5 or 6 years of playing 4-3-3. We knew that formation inside and out. We're about 13 or 14 games into this formation at the moment. There are going to be teething problems, but I think when you come into this season, everyone now knows that's the formation that you're going to be playing. So they've worked on it, you know, during the week. How are we going to make it difficult for Liverpool? Where are we going to attack them in the middle of the park? Those two defensive midfielders, the ball-playing midfielders for Liverpool. And I think Bournemouth need a little bit of credit for that, because they did. And it wasn't until Trent Alexander-Arnold went, I'm going to get some chalk on my boots here. Mm-hmm. And really sort of stayed more to the right-hand side, that Liverpool really got a grip on that game. And that's something that Liverpool have done. When they're at their best, they do well. You solve the problems on the pitch. And Liverpool, to their credit, did solve the problem, because they went, I see what they're doing. I know how to fix this. Go wide. Robbo has a fucking brilliant game on the left-hand side. Trent has a good game on the right-hand side. Szoboszlai comes into loads of space in the middle of the park. So Liverpool worked their own problems out before the manager got to them at half-time, and they deserve credit for that.
Yeah, that's it. And again, I think a lot of it was the psychological thing from us as fans of like, oh, here we go again. We're hoping everything's going to be fixed and sorted. And, you know, there's a real fear in the back of our minds. It was why actually watching the full weekend footy, you know, ending the weekend footy, watching Chelsea just get absolutely pummeled in the end by West Ham was great, because, you know, it's like everyone's desperate to analyse the season in one game of footy, whereas you're right, Liverpool showed something. Diaz grabbed the game. You know, it's an absolute moment of magic from him, and that's why you've got him, we've got the lads who can get us out of this trouble. So I totally agree with that, is that the best Liverpool teams figure out the problems and solve them in play. They don't need to get to half time. And I went in at half time with a general sense of, we've not been very good here, but we're winning 2-1. That's quite funny. You know, I've seen better Liverpool teams go in at 0-0 in those games, and, you know, when they take 45 minutes to work out their opponents. And I know we got a penalty in that, of course, but we were having loads of corners. We were building into good positions. Van Dijk hit the crossbar. You know, we got in behind a couple of times. It didn't quite work out. We scored a brilliant goal with Diaz, and we got the pen. It was like, oh, but when I then looked at the stats at that time, I was like, oh, we're absolutely all over them. But I was totally on edge. One, because we were crap at the start. Secondly, because all the action happened down the far end of the pitch from me, so I couldn't get the comfort of seeing it all unfold right in front of me, of course. But yeah, so much of it is a lingering thing left over from last year, but I just need Liverpool to be good. And we were chatting about it in the pub before. Us beating them 9-0 was like the worst thing that could have happened for this game, because there's just an expectation then. Like, because you've beaten them 9-0, I'm not saying Liverpool necessarily felt like this, or every Liverpool fan in the stadium felt like this, but there would have been a level of dismissiveness around, oh, it's only Bournemouth, even though obviously they did us in the other game last season. So I think it took a load of credits for Liverpool to be able to drag themselves into it. Anyone else want to talk, Diaz? Because that goal is...
Genius is the word. Yeah. Genius is the word, man. I mean, I don't know how long it is. I'm sure somebody out there will have measured it from the deflection to the ball in his toe. Quarter of a second to then decide, I'm going to do this. And in the time he's flicked it up to decide, I'm not going across the keeper, I'm going near post. Another quarter of a second. And then the skill set to actually do it. I mean, it's brilliant, but I love the build-up play. I mean, I know Jota gets the little deflection and stuff, but Trent Alexander-Arnold, I mentioned it before, he's got chalk on his boots, cuts it inside. Jota's first touch, brilliant, takes him into the penalty area, takes him to the byline, decides to cut it back, correct decision, definitely. Deflection, whatever, goal, unbelievable. But when you look at it, Mo makes a self-sacrificing run to free Jota up. Mm-hmm. And when you stop it and the ball's played to Jota, it's 3-on-3. It's Mo Salah inside the penalty area. It's Jota inside the penalty area. And it's Diaz between the sticks. That's what you want from your three forward players. And there's only three Bournemouth defenders. So it's 3-on-3 in the penalty area. And back in Liverpool to score there all day, every day. More of that, please.
Yeah. Chris talks about it. It's a decision from Diaz to finish it that way, Dan.
Yeah.
And there's no like, because there was the Arsenal goal last weekend and Martinelli does like a spin. And the ball like flies off, and you can make a case, is he trying to go past the man? Is that just rolled away? You watch it, Diaz sets that flick up for himself. It couldn't be more deliberate. It's so obvious in how he moves his body, and that is just it's inspiration.
It is absolutely, yeah, it is genius, like Chris rightly says, and it's the improvisation of it all and the speed of thought as well, because like I say, for the minute it takes, for the second it takes that deflection, you have got no time to think, you've got no time to stop. A lot of players would kind of set themselves and maybe even lay it off to somebody else running into the box, but not him. He's got that awareness of what's going on around him, and he's got the skill set to do it as well, let's be honest. So
he looks like someone's told him, like Klopp said, like we've been talking about it all summer, does he get enough goals, he got enough output?
That's the thing, yeah.
And someone's gone, you need more goals, mate, and he's gone, okay, Sean.
But that's in 2 weeks now. Obviously, he's got 2 and 2. That's two very different stylistic goals. And that's so, so massive. Because Sadio Mane scored a whole manner of different types of goals. Yeah. He scored that one with arriving at the back post, relative tapping. But that predatory instinct, we've seen that last week at Chelsea. And now he's produced that bit of magic as well. Having him doing them types of things in front of the goals is absolutely massive, because we know he's got all the trickery, we know he's got the speed, all that type of stuff, but he did need to add goals to his games. That was a legitimate conversation. People did have legitimate doubts about it. He's 2 and 2, and sort of in the way they've come about, they couldn't be more different, and that's massive.
Another thing on that is he's got the number 7. You can't imagine how big of a thing that is for Liverpool. You know, Kenny Dalglish, Luis Suarez, one of the greatest, in fact, the greatest footballer I've ever seen play at Anfield. Yeah. And Luis Diaz has now got that number 7. And maybe that's gave him a lift. Maybe it has. He's no longer number 23. I'm number 7 for Liverpool. He's got the skill. He's clearly got the instinct at the back post. So maybe the number change as well has gave him a new lease of life. Who knows? But let's hope that is the case, because he's looked sharp and on it. And also his desire, the fact that he missed out last season. That's in pre-season, yeah, he was scoring goals and screaming. Yeah. And like anyone else would be like, lads, it's just pre-season. Yeah. But he's not But he's not played football in how long. He came in the last maybe 3-4 games, got, you know, 20 minutes here and there. So he's so happy to be back, and his desire is there, and that's what I love about it.
He's come in, hasn't he? When he first came to the football club, we know where we were going for 4 trophies at the time. He's a big reason for us getting to those finals, and he gave the entire squad a lift, and that first 6 months was perfect. As far as a new signing comes in, it was brilliant. Didn't quite get enough goals. You kind of expect that from a new signing coming in. Last year, let's just write it off. He was a 1-4 player for the few games that he managed to get. This year is his second season, building on the back of that first one. That's what he's going in mentality-wise, is he's coming in going, I've got to build on that first 6 months, and this is what he's got to do. He's got to score those goals. He's got to get assists. He knows that Nunes is there. He knows that Jota is there that can play on those left-hand side. He knows that Gakpo's there, and he knows he's got to get the goals and assists. And quite honestly, he looks like he's in the frame of mind where he's able to do that. Not only that, but when he came in, he'd had more minutes than anybody. He played more minutes than anybody that season as well. We knew there was a hangover there. We're seeing a fresh, recuperated, confident Luis Diaz heading into this season, who's on for 46 goals.
Absolutely. Another player.
44 games left.
Yeah.
I did the maths. Minimum.
Flying. I want to talk, Chloe, about Virgil van Dijk. I love him when he's in that kind of mood, when he plays footy. He just, you know, it's a bit like the, just so pissed off that he's forced to engage, but not in a really grudging way sometimes, where he then takes it out on everyone else. He's actually getting angry with the opponents for testing him, but the thing is, he's passing all the tests. I love it when he pours the afterburners on. He needs to almost rebuild his aura this summer. He needs to remind them that he's not a faded power, that he is the best in the business, and get performances like that. He was front foot, and that's not what we've become accustomed to. He's having to rebuild that, and I think, again, that performance, I love it. I love angry Virgil.
Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant, and I think a couple of weeks ago I was sat here saying he's not my kind of captain, but performances in like that, and you will, you know, make yourself. It was the fact that he was screaming at everyone as well. When we scored, he was screaming. He was front foot, like you said. Every ball that went up to their striker, he was just nicking in front of them and saying, nah, nice one, I'll have that. I'll just regain possession and pass it off here and let us go. He was commanding with his back line, you know, after the first 10. You could hear him screaming at Konate and Trent to move up the pitch, stay alongside him. He reads the game so well. Any one-on-ones he was dealing with, he was winning header after header after header, every ball that came up. And, you know, I think for the last year or so, I've turned around and said Konate is better than Van Dijk. The other day, Virgil van Dijk could have been man of the match if a certain Szoboszlai wasn't on the pitch. Yeah. He was that good. And you know, Bournemouth aren't an easy team to play. He had to deal with Dom Solanke, who has got the stature to hold off players. He does. He holds the ball up while he brings players and he drags them up the pitch. And Virgil just absolutely put the fires out all over the place. Absolutely loved it from him. He almost gets the goal with, obviously, one from a corner. But yeah, that is the Virgil that I know and love. That is the Virgil when he's at his best. To see, I haven't seen glimmers of it in ages. And that right there, I thought to myself, you know how everyone's writing off Virgil van Dijk? If he puts a season in like that, he's just the best defender in the league again.
I've had 10 years or more of Steven Gerrard being the captain. I've missed the withering glance from my captain to let the rest of the team know he doesn't approve. Virgil's got a little bit of that as well as the mouth.
It's one of them where we'll have to see how Trent responds to the vice captaincy. But Virgil, it looks like it's made him fight a bit more. It's like saying, you know, everyone's looking to you. Everyone looked to you anyway, but beyond, people would normally look to you and Milner. And Henderson, guys who want to go and demonstrate just how much you want to go and be the ones to win the fights. Go and win the fights. I think he's flourishing so far.
We were saying on the final word show before, and I think for me the big thing is, I think you touched on this actually, so I'll expand it, because I think this is what you were sort of talking about, is Virgil van Dijk for me, when he's at his probably worst, and his worst is still very good, by the way, but for context, he just backs off, I think we all know that, but it became too much. He was doing it. You need to be proactive at times. You can suck them in and make them think, because everyone was thought, he's just going to back off. He's just going to make a decision. And that's what players were doing on him. Now he's going, I'll back off. They get comfortable and then he goes and takes the ball. That's what he's needed to do. He's needed to be proactive and just mix it up a little bit and make it difficult for them.
The problem was, like Paul alludes to as well, is he had that aura, and that aura was attackers were scared of him because he had that record. No one ever dribbled past him. And defenders would almost see what he was doing. They were waiting for him to make a move and they weren't doing anything themselves. They were kind of freezing, getting to him and going, oh my god, that's Virgil van Dijk. But he lost that last season, so attackers were just taking him on and they were taking shots and they were scoring goals, because I think it was Jadon Sancho in the United game, van Dijk was stood there and that was when everyone pointed to him. So what's he doing? Because he wasn't reacting, he was just standing waiting for you to make a move, and attackers were going, all right, then I'll just score. But he's getting back to the van Dijk that, again, we know and love, that deals with things. He's not just being passive and waiting, he's actually getting out there and going, yeah, he's being a front by the fact that people have the audacity to come near him, and that's great.
That's it. You know, you write that backing off thing, it's a bit like, it's an old comic book style thing where it's a Batman or it's a character called Midnight who would say in a battle, I've basically worked this out a million different ways of how this fight can go before it's even started. You've lost before you've even thrown a punch. And that's how Virgil van Dijk has defended for the last two, that he's defended on aura a lot of the time, because as you say, I mean, Lautaro Martinez, I don't think at any point he got within 5 yards of van Dijk across two legs of Champions League football. Yeah, because he was like, he's going to tackle me. So he tackled himself. He bent his run away from him rather than go and face it.
Paul Jimenez had a 1v1 and just shot from about 30 yards out at Anfield because he just couldn't even be asked. He was like, no, thank you.
Right, yeah, right.
The other thing, I want to give a big shout out to Robertson, because I dragged him through the complete mud at Chelsea. I thought he was horrific, worst player on the pitch. He helped Virgil out as well, it goes to show. He was more disciplined, but he still was really good going forward. He was checking his line. He was actually in that first half when Liverpool were really struggling, he was the one who was like, lads, give me the ball and I'll get us out then. And you know, he had a torrid time up against Reece James, Sterling, Enzo Fernandez against Chelsea, but he was really good. And that's the best thing about it, you can be criticised when you're crap and you get all the laudits when you're good, and I thought Robertson was really good
just on that. I think that's because he was allowed to play as a left back.
Yeah,
because we weren't getting into the box at all. Trent wasn't going into midfield, probably by choice rather than design, but he wasn't going and joining midfield, and therefore Robbo wasn't tucking in. He was just a left back, and we know he's probably one of, if not the best left back in the world still. He still holds that mantle, but when he becomes a left-sided centre back, that's when problems come.
And again, you know, there's not many teams we're going to come up against to have that Reece James, Raheem Sterling axis on that side. You know, we talked about it last week, is some of that is just because that's where Chelsea's best attacking threat is. To target that, if any team targets any particular footballer with two players, you've got one to run at and you've got one to run around, you're going to find that hard to defend against. Not to defend Robertson in general, but he had a stinker of a game. But it was a different threat he was up against Bournemouth, and I agree, I thought he had a good game. Let's talk through some of the key moments of the match then. Szoboszlai's penalty. I am made up that we've got a footballer who wins penalties for us, by the way. I mean, there's a variety of reasons that I won't say any of the obvious on a podcast, but like maybe just the referee just liked the look of him and doesn't like and haven't liked the look of a number of our players over the years. I don't know, but he won one of the softest penalties I've ever seen.
Really good.
Yeah, wow. One of the softest pens I've ever seen. Love it. Adore it. More of that. Yeah, if he's got that in his locker, great. It's mad. I mean, Harry Kane would be incredibly proud of how he's won that pen. Made up for it.
VAR had a shocker, didn't it?
Yes.
You were never overturning that. He's got that swan dive absolutely perfected. And even the sprawl of the arms as he hits the deck, he's got that down. And you're right, if he wins pens like that, more power to it. That's sound.
That's a penalty in real time.
Yeah.
It is a penalty in real time.
In real time, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And listen, he makes a beeline for the corner of the penalty area and it's the footwork before he cuts it back. He faints inside, draws the tackle and knows he's going outside. Best case, he gets a penalty. Worst case, he skins the man and he's in the penalty area.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just so clever, isn't it? But it's that little feint and then it's the cutback. Anywhere else on the field, we're not talking about that as a foul.
Yeah.
It is a free kick and we move on with the rest of the day, which is how penalties should be given in the area anyway. So it's all day a penalty. He does make the most of it, but he gets it. So what?
I think he should be on it as well, to be honest. I think...
Yeah, to have this conversation, do we think Mo Salah should still be on penalties for Liverpool? No. Chloe blocks him.
No, I know you want to be top goal scorer, but it's not about individual awards at this moment in time. He's not... And I don't like left footers on penalties already. I've dealt with it for years.
Take your prejudice.
So sorry, I just don't like it as a right-footed person. And, you know, he missed the one against Bournemouth. He missed the one before that. He's missed... this one. He luckily gets the rebound, and actually where I was stood on the cop, I thought he'd missed it for a slight second. I'd nearly had a heart attack. Put McAllister or Szoboszlai on it and see how good they do, please.
I mean, I know the right is synonymous with prejudices, Chloe, but I didn't really think it was a literal what hand people most prefer to use as well.
Like,
I feel very uncomfortable all of a sudden, like I'm not welcome in my own studio.
Do people like left footers on penalties?
I think that's a common belief that I don't like left footers on penalties.
I don't like the run up either.
It's the goal is symmetrical. Is symmetrical. It's exactly the same whether a left footer takes them or a right footer.
Like it at all.
It is.
Name the best penalty takers ever. No left footers.
Robbie Fowler was a great penalty taker. He was so good he could choose to miss.
Messi's pretty good.
Yeah, but he's...
But Messi's the best to ever walk
the
earth.
Okay, so
surely then the left footers are just better than right footers.
No, I wouldn't say Messi's the best penalty taker.
I mean, Messi's the best footballer of all time.
Best
and he's left footer.
Ever,
Diego Maradona, left footer.
Yeah. I'm a Chloe.
I'm talking about penalties, though.
Like
I'm not talking about who's the best players.
Okay. Cool. Mahalovic.
Is anyone in the comments here agreeing or disagreeing?
I don't know. I've been holding on to some. Let me just read these super chats out before I lose them. I've lost them. Brilliant.
It's absolutely Sober's life for pens, by the way. He gets the same corner every time and nails it in every time. It's him.
Yeah. I don't know about that personally.
Would you keep Salah?
I think Errol made a great point on the instant match reaction. I think it was Errol on the instant match reaction about maybe someone coming in and hopefully getting one in the League Cup or the Europa League. I think it's a different ball game, right? If you take Salah off for someone who's never taken a pen for Liverpool mentally for what Salah can do, as opposed to some lad comes in and gets two penalties and scores them both, and then there's a conversation to be had about it. I think there's a lot to be gained from giving Salah goals and the confidence that he gets and moves forward into week in, week out in the open play.
He's a better footballer when he's got a goal.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think you can gain a hell of a lot from it. Mm. Like, listen, I'll be honest. I agree. I don't think he's a very good penalty taker. I don't. He doesn't hit the corners. When he hits the corners, he tries to knock
him
over.
He doesn't have a consistent technique.
He's got it in his own head because of Ben Foster. And Ben Foster putting it out there, wasn't it, on that podcast where he's like, he came up to me and was like, out of interest, which way would you have gone and all this type of stuff. So goalkeepers know that he's thinking about these types of things. He's in his own head. Goalkeepers are in his head. He needs to just go back to slotting the ball away and moving on with it. But ultimately, you know, I think it's in Liverpool's best interest, certainly at this stage of the season, to keep Salah getting goals.
Yeah, AC asked in the super chat, can we talk about Salah with penalties? I have little confidence now. It's getting worrying now. Maybe we can switch him out for Szoba or McAllister. I mean, again,
the better penalty takers, I grant that. I'm not arguing that. Like, I'm really not.
Yeah, what do you reckon, Sam?
For me, I'll be swapping him. I've never been a huge fan of Salah on penalties. I think he doesn't have that consistency of ball striking, quite frankly. He just looks to whack it a lot of the time. The one he scored in the final was just a quick, if you touch this, you're going in with it, essentially, to the goalie, which is fine. That's all well and good, but it doesn't fill me with confidence, let's put it that way. Obviously, blazed one over last year against Bournemouth. He misses the one against Arsenal, sends that wide, I think I'm right in saying. And then the one Saturday, it's a bad pen. That's just a poor penalty.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen people trying to put it's too close to the keeper. Yeah. It's so, so savable for the keeper. So, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it. I get the point about sort of filling in with confidence, but for me, if it was just a question of who's your best penalty taker, they should be on pens. It's not Mohamed Salah. Yeah. It's Szoboszlai right now, and that's as simple as that.
If in a penalty shootout he steps up first, I am a little bit asking why. But I'm sound with putting him in the list because he's an attacker and he's got the confidence and it's Mo Salah to back himself, but I wouldn't put him first in my penalty shootout, and that first person in the penalty shootout should be the first person for me who takes pens on your football pitch. And also, like, once again, if a penalty is what decides the game and you've not got your best penalty taken on it, I'm asking you questions then. Well,
81% conversion rate's pretty damn good when you've taken 30-odd penalties.
Well, I always felt stupid.
It's the same as Steven Gerrard's, pretty much, isn't it? You know, we looked at it before and, like, Jan Mobley's is better. The problem I think you've got sometimes is scoring 5 out of 5 is great, but it's only 5, and there's not data out there on goalkeepers with 30-odd penalties and where you've gone and all that type of stuff. So it actually weirdly becomes much harder the more penalties you take a football team, because goalkeepers have just got more information about you.
Yeah. Stuart Armstrong saying there, from fact, Szoboszlai taking 15 pens, only missed one. You know, I agree with the at least it's a known entity. You know, not just that Salah has a pretty good conversion rate, but as I say, it's all the things that you get the benefits of him. The relaxation he seems to feel in his game once he's off and running. It's just that point of, I think now that Erling Haaland exists, I don't think anyone else can win the Golden Boot.
Yeah.
So it's one of them where just let someone else who's going to be more likely to win a game of footy for us take it. But there's no guarantee that McAllister and Szoboszlai are that, because you're right, it's different taking a penalty for Liverpool than it is taking a penalty for whatever level and levels you've been at, which might sound ludicrous. I'm sure someone will point to like a big Argentina one for McAllister or something that I've totally overlooked here, or, you know, as captain of Hungary or whatever, but you're taking the pens off Mo Salah. You're not just playing against the goalie and the crowd and everything. You've taken the pens off Mo Salah, who's going to be sat there going, go on then, dickhead. Go on, stick that away. You're taking my pens, have you? Go on then. Go on. Nah.
If it was in the 89th minute, you were drawing 1-1 and we won a penalty, who would you want on it? Salah still?
Yeah, this I think I would,
point.
Because
if it's a game-winning opportunity, if this is literally the difference between winning a game and losing a game, I want my best penalty taken on. The best thing that can happen is Salah gets a rest, goes off on the 70th minute.
I don't think Chloe's asking me a question.
No,
then.
Sorry, I'll the best.
I think I fell for that. I think it might have been rhetorical. What do you think?
The best thing for Liverpool is Salah goes off in the 70th minute. We win a penalty, and it's between McAllister or Szoboszlai to take it, and we see what they're like, and then you've got the first one under the belt. But back to my question, if it isn't the last minute of the game, who would you want stepping up?
If you're pure penalty takers, I understand it, I really do. I think you could do more harm than good for taking Salah off penalties.
So it's not actually about who's the best penalty taker, it's more about what it has an impact on thereafter for you.
Listen,
because James Milner was always in this conversation, wasn't he, when he was at the club?
But he got faded out, and that's what happens, though, doesn't it? You don't take penalties off Gerrard. You don't take penalties off Salah. Invariably, he ends up not in the team, and someone else starts taking them.
And that's a conversation
instead.
That's easier to do. You know what I mean?
But if he misses another one, then you'd have to have that conversation and say, mate, you're shit at these, and you're going to keep missing them, because that was a bit. It was too close for comfort for me, that, because it was a terrible penalty, and he's had a few bad ones now, and I would be leaning towards moving someone else on them. He's probably in last chance saloon with it, because you're right, if, you know, it wasn't a pivotal, it was quite important moment of the game, obviously puts us in charge, you know, doesn't it, for the first time. But I think the lads are too new at the football club right now for it. their time will come. You know what I mean? They've got, hopefully got 3, 4, 5, 6 years at the footy club.
There's no need to make it a narrative around Salah not being good enough for something at this stage of the season when he has just scored.
And not while the Saudi Arabian transfer market is open beyond ours. So wait until after that. Wait until their transfer window shuts and then take Salah off all the things you want to take him off. We had some good comments in and around this. I'm just going to quickly track them down. Let us know in the comment section underneath, who would you have as Liverpool's penalty taker?
What about if we just let them take a couple, right? Yeah. And then once everyone's forgot that Salah actually takes our penalties, we lob him back on them so that they haven't done as much work on Mo Salah's penalties. And then you're up against goalkeepers that have been expecting a McAllister or expecting a slobber slide. I know you're changing and interchanging, but if you just say to Salah, hey, lad, the next five, we don't get a lot of penalties, so it'll probably be the next one. You're not on this, but it's more just to put in the keeper's mind, they've got three people here who can step up for a penalty. What one are they going for? Yeah. Just to get in the keeper's mind
problem
a bit
is,
more.
He missed a target, it was two of the three he's missed. Yeah. So the keeper's, doesn't matter, does he?
We had a couple of just early doors. One of them pertains to what we'll be talking in a bit, but Sam said, we already have two DMs by trade and end on Bacetic. I would argue that right back and centre back is more of a priority between now and the end of the window. We'll discuss that in part two. AP06 says, great to have football back and running. Wondering, will we see the return of Thursday Night Pint this season? Probably not. We were having a chat around it before. More to be explained on that in the future. Chris, I love some of these comments. Baked, FSG out, not signing another six. Disaster. And Keith Charles wants to know if we'd be happy with us finishing third this year. Why do people do this? Is it what, like...
I was just trying to have a lovely Monday,
I know, honestly.
No.
Let's just say no. Right here, right now, I would not be happy with us finishing third. But context is king.
I have predicted that, though, so...
Yeah.
I think I predicted a second.
I was second.
I wasn't happy about that either, to be honest.
Let's move on, then. The second half, absolutely electric when we started, because we nearly pressed them into a goal straight from the kickoff. It was just brilliant. It was a wonderful little stretch of play where we run it all the way back to their goal line. It was it was great from the end.
Yeah, we were on it, weren't we, from the start of the second half. And it was great because I was in the cop. Like, you know, there's nothing better than your team attacking your end in a football stadium and that being the best end in football in the cop and stuff. So yeah, it was glorious. The atmosphere really cranked up. I don't know where you're close to me, aren't you? But it was really loud at points during that game, like more so than just, oh, it's the first game back. There was a real belief, I think, when we managed to get back into the game that Liverpool were going to go on and do stuff this season, not just in the game, but like the football was really good. We controlled the game. I remember looking at the time of maybe like the sending off, so we had about 20 odd shots.
Yeah.
Like, and Bournemouth had maybe 3 or 4, maybe something like that. So we really controlled the game. We really took advantage of everything that Bournemouth were offering us. And most importantly, our attacking players were linking up really, really well.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The big incident of the game, really, Chloe, is the red card. My initial reaction to it was, it was never a red card. That was my first take on it, because of the referees, it kind of impinges McAllister, which is why I was so shocked by it. I actually thought, is the referee going to give us some sort of decision here? Because he runs towards McAllister and doesn't slow down. So McAllister, right at the last second, bends his run around, and then all of a sudden he's reaching back to try and get control of the football. There are angles when I think it looks worse and other angles where it doesn't look quite so bad. For me, it's, although his studs are showing, it's not a proper studs up thing. He's trying to play the ball with his instep. The whole thing for me, I just think it's so incredibly stupid to just show the red card straight off the bat when you can wait 30 seconds and get it corroborated. The second he gives the red card there, then it's going to take something massive in the VAR for that ever to be overturned. So I just think it was ridiculously bad officiating. But what was your take?
My take was, I remember the foul being given and I was like, no, never. And I was like, oh my God, he's giving him a yellow. And then I was like, wait, he's going to his left pocket. Why is he going to his left pocket? And all of a sudden, this red card was shown. Anfield was completely and utterly stunned. Everyone probably thought, yeah, okay, it's a foul. Like, we were all fuming at the fact that we'd gave a foul when we were literally, we were just outside the box. We'd pinned them in and we'd given away a foul. And everyone thought it was a 50-50. It is. Both players' legs are up in the air. In fact, if McAllister is just a little bit lower, that lad's doing the exact same of what McAllister did to McAllister. Yeah. 50-50 inside of his foot. It's not high enough. There's no intent. It's not malicious. There's no force in it. It's like he kind of pulls out of it when he realises. I was stunned at the time that it being given a red, and I was literally stood there trying to, like, I was like, did anyone think it was like a massive foul? Like, if a yellow would have been shown, I would have thought, okay, maybe it's because, you know, they could have been on the break or something. Totally get that. But a red, it just seemed like no one else inside that stadium could have ever predicted that that was going to be a red card. McAllister did not expect it from his facial expression. That, if you're giving away reds for that, there should be a red in pretty much every single game.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, Harry Kane on Robertson, literally worse challenge than that. Intent, force, stood showing on the shin of Andy Robertson, gets away with a yellow.
The Cody Gakpo title means one has been brought up constantly all weekend long. Yeah. Dan?
Yeah. Thoughts? Yeah, not for me. Never has been for me. I must admit, sort of on first watching, there's a moment whereby I think he's going to do him here. He's going to do him bad here, because McAllister looks like he is going in studs up. He is going in high. And more importantly, he's second to the ball. And therefore, for a split second, you think, oh no. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like McAllister himself realises and pulls out massively, turns his foot. So you're right, it is the side of the foot.
He's like trying to flick the ball around.
Exactly. By the end of it, the contact is lower than it was originally, looks like it was going to be. It's on the calf instead of the shin, and
but it's
not
also
studs.
Inside of the foot.
Well, exactly, but he's turned his foot by the end. But like I say, for one split second, I thought, oh no. But then, like I say, by the time the contact's made, he completely backed out with the challenge, basically. It's like McAllister realises, oh, I'm second here, I'm not winning the ball, and he took all force out of it. So to give a red is absolutely ludicrous. I've seen lots of different takes, and I had lots of different conversations in here about it on Saturday. Never for me, never has been. And the referees backing each other up, I mean, they went to VAR. Paul Tierney was sat there. That was it. I would say, shadow a guess, that he didn't even watch it. He literally said, yeah, that's sound, mate. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Don't worry about that. Crack on. And then Mike Dean in the Sky Studio saying it was definitely red. They're just backing each other up by this point. What's the point in him or the fellow who used to do BTU? Was that? Who was the referee there?
Damn
Walton. Peter Walton, wasn't he?
What's the point in them? Whatever he says, just reveal.
But then even Bournemouth's manager, Iola, comes out afterwards and didn't look like a red. Yeah, so he said, which is fair. That's a fair assumption, because, like I say, end of the day, McAllister, it's a foul all day long. It's the yellow all day long, and he is second to the ball. It is too high. It's got bad things for it, but it does not tick the most important boxes. That's why it can't be a red.
Yeah, I think for me, I think I can understand why the referee's giving it. I think when he's watching it, he sees the foot land on the leg, and he turns to watch the ball, and he doesn't watch the follow through.
And then sees that, this guy come rolling past him.
And then sees a guy on the floor roll three times over. So yeah, absolutely. I get it. From where I was in the ground, exactly the same as Chloe. It's never a fucking red card. It's not. No one thinks it, there's even an inkling. There's always someone who goes, oh no, God, he's offside. Yeah. Or, oh no, God, he's going to get a red card. There was nothing. There was no misery arses panicking about us going to get a red card for that, because no one thought it was. But now, you know, I haven't seen it so many times and slowed down. I think we're refereeing on still images here, and you can't referee on still images.
And that's the problem, isn't it, with all these things, is that it's like Sobers Lies looks like more of a pen. Like, you know, on still images, anyone where you freeze it on contact between two footballers,
that's exactly,
is going to look absolutely brutal.
If you show me McAllister's foot on the fella's leg there, it doesn't matter what angle, whether he's pulling back, all I'm seeing is foot on leg. And I'm giving that out a card accordingly. We've got to stop all this. You know, we don't want them re-reffing. And Steve made this point actually earlier today, is that you've got to get the decision on the field, because they don't want to re-ref it on VAR now.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure, and it's why Szoboszlai makes sure that it's obvious, and it's why that lag goes down in the way that he goes down, because they want to stick with the referee's decision. The problem with that is the reason that VAR and everything was brought in is because the referees aren't very good. So keeping the decisions on the field with the referee who's shit who only gets to see it once is not actually a very clever thing to do.
The other thing is, I've not heard a single person who's played football or who is literally on TV, pundit speaking about football, who's came out and said, yeah, that's 100% a red. Yeah. Every single person has said it is a shocking decision. And we always go back to that. If you've never played football before, these refs have never played football before. They don't know at the angles at which you go in and the force and things. And is it Dermot O'Gallagher, whatever? Is it just Gallagher?
He's not Irish.
Just turned around and said...
Says on Paddy's Day, and
he just turned around and said, "No, it's never a foul."
Which
never...
is really surprising, by the way, because he never does that. But
he just said it's never a red card. Every pundit, Alan Shearer, they've all came out and said, "No, it's never a red." Even Mike Dean apparently came back out and said, "Oh, actually, no, it's not a red. It will not be turned over, because they'll manoeuvre it in a sense where they'll protect
them." Well,
we're
two games in, and here we are again.
Question of refereeing. Just wipe someone out last week. Yeah. Pickford does the same. Gets a red card this week. Yeah, he gets a penalty given against him this week.
Yeah, but we've seen it again. The
inconsistency.
No, that goes back to my point on this: is that they're incompetent, and they're incompetent, and they get slaughtered for it. And rather than get better or try to gain sympathy, so they've changed these rulings so that refs try and get a bit more respect. You've got to be a bit more respectful to referees, which I think is a really good idea, by the way. I think you need to change the culture and how we talk to referees and how referees are treated. But it all goes back to these are put upon, they're maligned, they're a little group who rank and file around each other at all times to protect each other. They're a little union, they protect their own interests. So like when people say, well, let's hear what the VAR are saying, they won't do it because they're scared of the added scrutiny. It's like, we already get absolutely, so it's like they get bullied, not going to put themselves in a situation to get more bullied. But again, it becomes this sort of negative spiral where they continue to be more incompetent, the pressure continues to mount on them, and they continue to back themselves and shield it off from the rest of the world. For me, just open it all out. I think people will be more sympathetic. You could hear what the decisions they're making. They're only human. They get it wrong. And the point is, on that one, the referee, I can only assume he clearly thought that was a red card, because you don't pull the red card out unless you think it was a red card decision. There's no agenda there. He's not decided he's going to fucking do Liverpool here by pulling the red card out. He's just seen that as a red card and given it as a red card, but it's not worthy of a red card. So what should happen is someone should be able to go, ah, mate, right, we've seen this one. I think in the heat of the moment, you've just seen this one wrong sound, but they won't, because, as I say, they're just trying to protect him from shooting.
That's exactly what they don't need to do. What they need is, you're right in terms of everything you've said, apart from the way that the VAR reacts to the referee. The VAR should say to the referee, how did you see that? And the referee should say, I saw that McAllister went in high and followed through. And then the VAR goes, I think you need to look at the monitor. And that's all the conversation that they need to have. What did you see? We think it's slightly different. Yeah. End of.
Just no one wants to be embarrassed. It's a very awkward situation. I mean, imagine that. You already got all the pressure and all the eyes on you. You've got two sets of fans, 50,000 people in the ground. Well, not quite. You know, it's another story for another day. But you've already got all that pressure, and now all of a sudden you've got to walk 35, 40 yards and go and stand in front of a telly while someone's talking to you, while everyone's baying for your blood around you, and then make another decision based on all this. It's no surprise they don't want to go to the screens, because they don't want, no one wants that, the extra pressure of being seen to be a bell end or whatever. I don't know.
I reckon if he would have won over, he'd still gave it, by the way.
Maybe.
I think he must have thought it was that much of a stonewall penalty that I reckon if he went over there, they'd find a way to say.
They don't, though. Whenever you get sent to the screen, it always goes the other way, yeah. Doesn't it?
There's been maybe one where he's actually stuck to his decision, but I just. Shocking.
Moving things on to more positive things before we take a break. We touched upon it, but Sobber's like, I was a little unsure, Chris, when we signed him, whether he was really quite ready straight away. I thought he might be one that takes a couple of months to really bed in, and we'll never know now because of the DM situation whether that's the case or not. But this was the game where I was like, it made sense to me. I understand what he is now. He is, we'll see him at the other end of the pitch, but I liked his work rate. All the areas of the pitch he was getting into are the ones where Jordan Henderson was trying to do that last season. But being Jordan Henderson, the central midfielder, at best box-to-box midfielder, at worst defensive midfielder, being asked to do a job rather than being a natural fit for it. That run in the second half.
Right hand side, when he beats past two men and cuts to the byline. Yes. Unbelievable stuff, right? He took the game by the scruff of the neck, and I didn't know he was going to be that type of a midfielder, to be honest with you. I think from him and McAllister coming in, I've got to be careful how I worded this, because I tried to say this on the final word before. I wasn't disappointed, but it was nothing that I could hang my hat on from pre-season. Saturday's game is a hang your hat on moment. It's, you know, it's watershed, isn't it? He's got absolutely everything. He looks like the almost perfect. You turn up to a job and you've got the fucking Swiss Army knife. Right, what am I getting out here? All right, you need me to go pacey down the wing. Sound. You need me to link it up nicely in the middle of the box. Technical ability, great. You want me to cover it right back for Brent Alexander-Arnold? I'm there, mate. I've got absolutely everything. I'm big, I'm strong, I'm sexy. I float across the football field. I can do absolutely anything that I want. I've got end product, and I'll play the six for you if you need to, but I'm playing the eight at the same time because I've got the legs to be able to do it. It was an absolute monster of a performance.
I was listening to Klopp's pre-match press conference, Dan, and it was a point I'd made about Sobber's, like, my real takeaway positive from the Chelsea game was I thought he looked a little out of sorts with what he was being asked to do with the press, but where everyone else's legs fell off, he was still pressing the 95th minute. And actually Klopp made a big point. He said he was almost surprised by how good his engine was. That's a really encouraging. If you're going to be a Klopp midfielder, having that for me is like the entry requirements.
Yeah.
And what we're starting to see now is the little bits on top. At some point, he's actually going to get a little bit more comfortable and he's going to start shooting as well. Mm-hmm. And I think
get the third goal from him shooting.
Yeah. You know, he's good, but he's going to add goals, I think, to all that stuff we've seen on top. It looks like we've got a very special footballer.
Oh, absolutely. And I always love when a footballer takes offence to the situation. And it was like he did that. It's like he's seen his mate McAllister also making his Anfield debut get sent off and just was like affronted by it as well. That's not right. And put it right. I'm going to make sure we didn't lose this game of football, because last half an hour, he was like a man possessed. He was unbelievable. His engine was incredible. And just the desire to just get on the ball and make things happen, he was absolutely everywhere. And Chris sort of alludes to it. It was a statement performance from him. And in his second game in Liverpool shirt, competitive wise, anyway, at Anfield on his debut, it was like he relished the moment, and he looked at that situation and seeing a little bit up against it as much as we were down to 10 men and went, oh, this isn't happening, not on my watch. And I love lads that do that. Louis Diaz did it last year, for instance, against Palace when we went down to 10 with Darwin Nunez, and he went, oh no, this isn't happening, I'm playing. And this was Sobber's lie in a nutshell on the weekend. He was phenomenal. But it wasn't just legs and it wasn't just work rate, it wasn't just desire, it was quality as well. You've all referenced the run down the line, but absolutely everything he did, he was fine for like the first hour, but that last half an hour was just superhuman. It was phenomenal. I just loved it. And like I say, lads like him who take it to heart when something goes against you, I love having playing for Liverpool.
It's why it's captain hunger, isn't it? You know what I mean? People possess these kind of things. I could see it in Endo coming on the pitch. We'll do him in part two, but players who just it makes them go up a level. Virgil, again, I'd show
adversity, just brings the best out of them.
100% on that. I like the fact that he was asked, he said in his post-match interview, like Klopp said to me, well, you're playing the six now, but you need to sit back. And he kept screaming at him because he kept going forward still. Well, never mind.
But he does it in the last minute. He passes a ball off, makes a run down the line, and he's like one-on-one down the line, and he takes him for a little bit of a run, and then Yeah, no, I'm just going to stop on this ball. I'm just going to pass it back to my defenders and we're just going to keep the ball. He was the one, from the minute we got sent down to 10 men, the Bournemouth fans were up for it. The Bournemouth fans were like, boss, we're back in this. And Szoboszlai literally just went, you know what, lads, I'm just going to keep this ball away from you for the next 10 minutes. Get your crowd to shut up. Get ours to be more confident. And also, it was more like we were all still stunned. I think we were all still shocked at what was going on. It was a masterclass from the lad. And like you mentioned there, it wasn't just his work rate, which is ridiculous. I'd be surprised if he didn't run the most KM on that pitch, by the way. He was everywhere. But it was also the skill. It was the fact that like he'd pass it through the legs, like three people go off. I have never seen, and I do not want to put this pressure on, and I will not, and he's not the same player, but I have not seen a ball carrier for Liverpool like Steven Gerrard-esque before, since Steven Gerrard. Like, I love Chambo on the ball first couple of years where he really added
it's
in him.
It's the power when he runs that reminds me of Gerrard.
Ridiculous. The way he's a unit. Anyone wants the ball, absolutely have me off. I'm bullying you off this and I'm taking it off you. He just reminded me of a young Gerrard, and he's not Gerrard. He won't be Gerrard, but I was made up because I've not seen a footballer quite like that. I've not seen a footballer like Gerrard since Gerrard for Liverpool. And I sat there the other day and thought to myself, my God.
And he is sexy. Just the fact he said no pressure and then went on to say, look at young Gerrard. No pressure, mate. Story about
sorry
it.
About yeah. that, lad. Yeah. But it's just, you know, just use it as confidence. I'm really, really giving you everything.
Absolutely terrific performance. Yeah, very, very much one for the future scrapbook. Right, we're going to take a short break and then we return. We're going to be discussing Liverpool transfers. We're going to talk about Endo, his performance, and James Pearce reporting that Liverpool are not in for a specialist number six for the rest of the window, that after this.
Hey, what's happening? Our brand new book, Bobby Firmino, Best in the World, is available to order right now. There is a normal edition and an author signed edition on redmenmerch.com. Fill your boots with incredible stories of a cop icon, a season-by-season guide to Bobby Firmino's time on Merseyside with unique and incredible photographs from the archive, stats, unique artwork by brilliant Liverpool artists, features, quotes, and a whole lot more beside. If you are a Bobby Firmino fan or someone in your life is a huge Bobby Firmino fan, it is the perfect gift for you or for them. It is A4 size, premium format, and very limited edition. Get yours right now by heading to redmenmerch.com.
Yep. Grab your Bobby Firmino, Best in the World books right now. Let's quickly talk Wataru Endo, Chris. From out of nowhere. From absolutely out of nowhere, we signed a 30-year-old, 50-capped Japanese captain from Stuttgart. I think the immediate reaction was a bit like a, who? I didn't expect when I saw his name come in that I was then going to Google him to find out he was 30. I was really taken aback by that. We moved at pace, and one of the strangest transfers I think we've made in recent times.
Yeah, I think that's fair, isn't it? I think everyone was scrambling around for information about him. You know, not many people had obviously watched Stuttgart play. Not many people were even pretending this time to have heard of him. And that says a lot, doesn't it? When it's just not even worth pretending. Yeah. You've seen some lad play like Fabrizio Romano going, no idea. I'm not sure I even spelt that right. I'll check again. So it was a real strange sort of Thursday, Friday, wasn't it? And then obviously, you know that he's made it in time for the squad as the squad comes out, because I certainly didn't know until he was on the bench.
I was putting feelers out on Saturday morning and got nothing back to say whether he had his clearance or whatever. So yeah, the first we knew was that half an hour or so before the team came out.
And as soon as we went down to 10 men, you were like, he's defo coming on here. He was zipped off, he was warming up, and I think Klopp waited because we had an offensive free kick. Which we scored from, yeah, exactly. And then he brings him on, and first thing he does, that to my mind, was win the ball back and set us on a counter attack. And I'm like, Oh, hello, puppy. What have we got here? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. We're to the end, though. And he just bombed forwards like he's got no instructions. I think he had half a training session with the lads or something. Like, he had
in
no
the box idea. And I was like, where's me defensive,
yeah,
mid?
What are you doing, lads? Yeah. Thought you were the six. And then he gets beasted by one of their players. And Sobis, like, got beasted on the edge of the box. And I thought, here's the limitations because his pace isn't there. Yeah. And he sort of toddles back in. But then I was watching closer, as everybody will have been, for the rest of the game. And I was like, his positioning's where it's at. He's not the fastest. He's never going to be the fastest. But he was neat and tidy on the football. He won the ball back enough times for me to go, good tackle there. But where he was taking up his positions, I think, was the most important thing. He was helping to pin Bournemouth in. And then when Bournemouth gained a little bit of control last 10 minutes of the game, when we started to tire big time, four playing 10 men and coming into the season a little bit not quite ready to play 90s, I thought that's where he stepped up. He won his headers. For a defensive midfielder, yeah, I'm happy with that for the first sort of 30 minute performance.
Certainly on the back of no training and little sleep by all accounts as well over the last 48 hours beforehand. And like you've both alluded to there, we weren't sure if he's going to be in the squad. I'm not entirely sure he knew he was going to be in the squad until much beforehand. So I think he did a good job. I think the positioning was pretty good. Kind of took up them areas you'd like him to take up. Pretty tidy enough on the ball. Did some good things. He's already played more football than Arthur Mello for us. So that's a big tip. Yeah, I think he was sound. I wasn't expecting great things. Of course, you're not expecting great things. He's literally been dropped into a situation by, you know, as Liverpool debuts go, you've been at the club less than 24 hours. Your team's just gone down to 10 men. Yes, you're in the lead, but go on, lad, on you go. It's a bit of a mad situation for him. He probably didn't expect he was playing for Liverpool a few days earlier, let alone start or being involved in the game at Anfield. So, you know, credit to him for doing the job he did, really, because he didn't look massively out of place. He just looked like a fine footballer, and it was a fine defensive midfielder performance.
The best part of it was you could see how deprived of a DM we were when every time he won a tackle, the entire stadium
got 1-0 lead in the Champions League final, yeah. The way we were celebrating our DM.
It was a decent performance. I reckon he probably won the ball back more times in the 30 minutes he had than probably McAllister or Szoboszlai did.
Or Fabinho all of last season.
All of last season. A couple of times where he just advanced well up the pitch. And I was like, oh my God, is McAllister playing again? Who doesn't know this position? But yeah, he was sound. The crowd really liked them as well in terms of like the way we got behind them, and it was just so good to see people winning tackles.
It's one of them, isn't it? And again, I've just done a video on my channel today, and I want to stress this, that we shouldn't be overjudging things on limited, you know, experience of seeing them. But it was, I did chuckle immensely that he comes on, has his half an hour debut under quite trying circumstances and performs quite well, and then Moises Caicedo, the £150 million British transfer record, cannot get near a single West Ham player except to give a penalty away. Glorious stuff. Absolutely.
I'm shut on all of that because I just remember the Community Shield from last season. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
To borrow something from you, though, is that you don't get to not laugh at a... Don't go to a comedy show and not laugh at a joke just in case he says something you don't find funny later on.
Yeah,
get your enjoy your laughs while you can, because Moises Caicedo is brilliant.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a brilliant career, probably. But in terms of bars of expectation, I quite like that. There's a lad who's come in with zero expectation on his shoulder now. He's cost us very little comparatively in the market. Caicedo's come in now as a British transfer record, having been the centre of the biggest transfer saga of the entire window, into a really difficult situation where they needed to grab the game and completely failed to. Good.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And not to be the bearer of bad news on this, but we were playing a 4-4-1 when he came on, like, as well, which makes it a little bit easier for the DM. I think, you know, just to be, to sort of be real on it for a little bit, like, Bournemouth had no idea how to play when we were playing a low block, because Bournemouth have never ever decided to play at Liverpool attacking football when Liverpool are in a low block before. So they had absolutely no idea what to do and when to do it. And Liverpool just slotted in. And anyone, obviously, anyone of that level can play a 4-4-1 or 2. So we're totally ended it all right. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, though. It was a good performance from him, and we need to see a lot more from him.
Oh, 100%. I just think, if you take the context of the situation where all the things we've discussed there, he's barely even met his team. We're down to 10 men. He's chucked into a game, and I saw enough in there that went, okay, cool. You know, it's a
very small. I won't say he's not Kante, he's probably Makélélé.
Yeah, but better in the air.
Fair. Let's talk about the transfer options and what have you then. So, I mean, Dan, you'd be best placed to kind of talk about this at the forefront of our social game. That just leading up to the bid for Endo, mm-hmm. we saw like a real explosion in transfer rumours. Gravenberch came back to the agenda. Decore came back up again. Amrabat was very strong around that time as well. Mm-hmm. Little mentions again of João Palhinha and what have you. And then all of a sudden, yeah, Liverpool have put a bid in for Endo. It felt like Liverpool just got their act together in the space of about 24 hours or so in the middle to the back end of last week.
Yeah, it felt to me, and funnily enough, the Amrabat story sort of came out before the Endo stuff. That was like an hour beforehand. There was a report from Holland saying that Liverpool were quite far advanced with Amrabat, and all of a sudden, that was not off the cards, but the Endo stuff had really sped up. And it felt to me a little bit the back end of last week, as the Liverpool, we'd had our 2-3 weeks with the Lavia stuff included, of being messed around and sort of skirting around what we're trying to do. And because we'd obviously fell on the wrong side of both of them deals with Caicedo and Lavia, kind of felt like Schmadke, Klopp, whoever's at the forefront of it, has gone, right, we just need to get one now. And which one, who's the best that we can just go and get and can be in the building with inside the day? And it was Endo. And as it worked out, that was the right move to make, because we knew Stuttgart would be willing to sell for the price we were willing to give them. We knew Endo would absolutely jump at the opportunity, so we went and did it. And I think that's the right call. A lot of people aren't going to like it because we have been linked, and we did obviously have that huge bid the week earlier. People just want to spend money for spending money's sake. But ultimately, in terms of answers and in terms of solutions, he might not be the worst one. I think that's probably a good shout. Now, what happens next is obviously the next question. I think the Endo business is shrewd. I think it's savvy. I think it'll end up being a good bit of a transfer activity, to be honest. But it's fascinating now because obviously you mentioned the James Pearce stuff, and I think it kind of ties in. I mentioned to you this morning, Paul, what Mel Reddy was saying a few weeks ago in terms of Liverpool wants a destroyer and a more progressive type. Mm-hmm. And for me, Endo is your destroyer. Now, the Decore links remain, and the Amrabat stuff is kind of waning a little bit. I think it was Endo or Amrabat, and we've come with Endo, which is fine, because in terms of fee, they were not too dissimilar. But what happens next, you're right, the Gravenberch stuff has been around all summer. That has not gone anywhere. I spoke to somebody last week on Gravenberch in Liverpool. All it is with him is buying. Bayern are the only thing stopping it happening. That's a huge part of it. Of course, it's because they're the club that own him. But he sat on the bench for the first 180 minutes of their football season. He hasn't kicked the ball in anger yet. So he's not going to be happy with that. Of course, he's not. United are in the frame for that too. So he's a fascinating one to me. Andrea Fluminense remains on the cards as well in that case. But both of them tick that. Can play a six, not always going to be a six, and they are more progressive, so that does seem to work for us.
We're in that awkward situation where we're back to a lack of understanding exactly what's going on behind closed doors, Chris, and we're piecing it together based on information that we maybe had a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago, and a lot of assumptions. Like, my main assumption, because the thing that's led out of this is obviously James Pearce saying we're no longer in the market for a specialist six. The headline, just to be perfectly clear, and it's not, again, the writers don't write headlines, editors write headlines. Endo has been bought to start Liverpool matches. They aren't targeting another number six this summer. Now, I could focus on the this summer bit if I wanted to, and maybe that might lead to the Andre thing. What I think it's more prominent to say is that Klopp's been spoken very highly about him. He clearly likes him. He clearly wants him to start football matches for us. But my understanding of Liverpool's situation was, we thought Fabinho was staying. We have Bacetic, and we were trying to add Lavia to the mix. If Endo is Fabinho's replacement, we still own Bacetic. He's now back. It still strikes to me that we would be looking for someone else still yet to do this. So that does feel a little at odds with my understanding of what Liverpool are doing. But then you get into conversations around what Dan's saying. Someone who can do a bit of that might be quite a smart move, but what's your general thoughts?
I think where Dan sort of going, probably a bit more where Dan is at the moment. I think, you know, Jürgen likes versatility, and having someone that maybe, you know, he thinks that he could train into a long-term six, or having that ability to get games somewhere else in the midfield, is probably going to be a bit of a good idea for him. I think the summer thing makes me think of, obviously, like you've just said there, you know, Andre, maybe in January or whatever. But I think ultimately as well, I have to take another step back and go, we've had our pants pulled down in terms of transfer budget for a long time here, and everyone's known we need a six. And if I wanted to go in for a six that I couldn't afford, I'd be saying to everybody, we don't need a six no more. And those the fucking man. Yeah. You know what I mean? In terms of the negotiations, I don't think it's that, but I think there's also a little bit of that as well. You know what I mean? So I think, look, we've got McAllister who can play there. We've seen that now. We've got Endo who can play there. We've got Bajcetic who can play there. If you added somebody like a Gravenberch or a Decore into the middle of the park, great. It means that Gakpo becomes one of the forward players again. Yeah. And I think that's a consideration as well. You know, McAllister and Szoboszlai are who we want there. But again, I'm just thinking out loud here, but I wonder if the weekend they've gone, well, Trent Alexander-Arnold playing right back was really good and Robertson was really good when he was playing a left back. And I wonder if we just short the midfield out. Can we go old school 4-4-3? Can we go 4-3-3? And I think we'd have the midfielders to be able to do that if we decided to as well.
We've got a super chat in here just relating to this from Keith. It says, love you lot, but if we want to be better than at least one of Arsenal or City, we need a non-30-year-old number six. What do you think, Claire?
His age was, when I read it, like you said earlier, you weren't expecting that. That is not a player that Liverpool buy, because it's not a player Liverpool buy 10 days ago, because that's not the type of players we were looking at. You look at your Szoboszlai, you look at McAllister, both in a boss age range, Lavia, Casado, we were in for, even Amrabat, 27, you know, not the oldest. I think Liverpool have just kind of, you know, when you've got like a leak somewhere and you just put a bit of duct tape over it and you're like, right, that can see me for another month or whatever, yeah, and then I can get the proper replacement in. I'm hoping it's something like that. I love Doucouré for Palace, think he's boss. I've always said I think we need two anyway in the midfield, because we already had, we wanted Fabinho and Lavia was going to be your backup, and you had Bajcetic there. Well, we've already lost Fab, and you had Henderson who could play the six if needed. He's now gone as well. But what I will say is Gravenberch I absolutely adore as well, and I think if there's someone who can mould players and get the best out of them, it's Jurgen Klopp. Would I be sound with him coming in now, knowing that in January we could go for Andre and get him for cheaper? Yeah, because I like the look of him as well. And we could get a boss centre-back or left-footed centre-back. If we're looking at, you know, spending quite a big chunk of money on a centre-back position, in which I would have loved just to do this 12 days ago and get Gvardiol, but you just haven't done that, then I can see it, I can piece it together, there's reason behind it. And also Liverpool have had to react. It's not the player anyone would have wanted or expected at the time, especially not when you've gone from Lavia, Casado out of nowhere to then a lad no one's heard of. I get it, but at the same time, if this means that we can spend bigger in other areas, or if it can see us through and we're at a really decent level, and then we go and splurge the cash on the person who's right for us and available, then I can see what Liverpool are trying to do. It is which lane they're actually going down, because at the moment I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, that kind of my general gist on that is that I don't really know what they're doing, so I refuse to get drawn into being really angry about the whole thing. I can agree that if you're trying to stack us up man for man, I think, you know, in Man City, you've got Kovacic, Rodri and Calvin Phillips as their defensive midfield options. And Arsenal have got Partey and Rice. And ours are our Endo and then a bunch of lads, Bajcetic, and then a bunch of lads who can kind of do a bit there. I would suggest that we are not as well equipped as them. But then I also think we're so well equipped in other areas of the pitch, which, you know, I think you can't just view it in isolation. And I don't know enough about Endo to know whether he's good enough or not, because I think on paper, well, when Arsenal are spending £105 million on Declan Rice and then Liverpool are spending 16 on a 30-year-old and go through all the things that lads we've basically never heard of, that doesn't stack up. But also, it is about who plays best for the team. He could be really good. You know, we give him a 4-year contract, which seems at odds with what we normally do. I don't think he'll be playing 50 games a season for us in 3 years' time. I think that would be the plan. But we have clearly needed, I think it's proven because of losing Henderson. I wonder whether we'd have kept Milner if we'd known now. You know, it's one of those moves where I think Klopp's trying to replace a little bit of that X factor, that leadership, that experience kind of thing in the dressing room as well in this one. But I do think you need other players around. I'm not totally convinced that this guy should be is ready to be Liverpool's main number six, but that's only here now. He's played half an hour for us.
Yeah, I think for me, look, Liverpool have fucked this DM search up. Yeah. Let's not beat around the bush here. You know, we've messed this up and we're trying to make the best of a bad situation. It doesn't look like there's any that Liverpool fancy that are on the market today.
At the price that they wanted.
You know, Amrabat, I would have been really happy with Amrabat, to be honest with you, for the price. But it wasn't a long-term solution either. Endo's not a long-term solution. Gavin Birch isn't really the six that you're looking at anyway. The Corey's not really the six that you wanted anyway. He's a bit more of a box-to-box and can do that mould. So I don't see... No one's said, there's a six here for 80 million quid, would you have him? If I looked at him, I'd go, maybe, yeah, but it doesn't seem to be that on the market.
Yeah.
So at some point, you've just got to change direction and go, well, actually, if I can't sort the six out now, what can I sort out? And I think that's what Chloe's saying is, can you sort the other problems in the squad out? And I'm okay with that.
Do you think
they have fucked it up to get here.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think this is a bit like, we've talked about the Nat Phillips, Reece Williams thing, where we're going to say to the market, there's a bunch of lads who aren't the right option. This lad might not be, his ceiling might not be at the level we're looking for long term, but at least he actually fulfills the brief. You know, we've gone out and got someone who at least does the job that they want to do.
The floor is better, then I'm okay with that. The ceiling might not be better, but the floor's better. The general level has come up because we've got someone who can actually play a number six role, and I'm absolutely fine with that.
Yeah.
Also, you know, we talk about him being 30. He's played less minutes in his entire career than Trent Alexander-Arnold has in his career, and Trent is 24.
That's false.
Is that not true?
No, that's not true.
Oh, yeah,
he's a late bloomer, though. He's a late bloomer. That's what Klopp said.
And
it's been said to me by a few people who know him far better than I certainly do, that he is... Like, that is the case. Like, Japanese players, generally speaking, the Japanese expert told me this the other day, they do get better. Their primes are later in their career than what we could become used to.
So I was looking into a bit of this because I know you'd made that point, and then we looked into it a bit deeper and found out it wasn't. Andrew Beasley put the tweet out initially, who said it was like 22,000 versus 34,000 minutes or whatever for Endo to
Fabinho. FB read it wrong.
They didn't have any of the Japanese.
He's played 100 games in the J2 League,
okay,
which hasn't been factored in, and there's lots of like Japanese Cup competitions and stuff that he's played in. But again, it goes back to this thing is he's come up the rank. I honestly don't mind it. Where he's been isn't as important as about where he is now. And if Liverpool can get a couple of years out of a player and he can do a really good job for us, fine. It comes down to it. For me, it's again, what's next is if this facilitates us getting another player in who's brilliant, that's going to really kick us on or give us something more, then I'm happy with that. But then I'm not saying I would be unhappy. If Liverpool just win football matches, none of this will matter. None of this will matter in a month if we've gone unbeaten and everyone stayed fit and we're all kind of flying. Because at the moment, I was just looking at it, Curtis, I know he's injured at the minute, but he's only played 25 minutes. Elliott's only played 29 minutes for us. Bacetic hasn't kicked the ball for us yet. We still do need, we need another body in that mix to get Gakpo out of that mix.
Yeah.
But, you know, Thiago's not played a minute for us yet. So there's four footballers who've basically not even played a game yet. And we want to add one more into that. Mm-hmm. And I agree, for safety's sake, we very much should be doing that. But we're all right in terms of general coverage at the moment. But it is what happens next. And I was postulating this. I don't know how likely Gavin Birch is, but if you could get Endo and Gavin Birch for the amount of money that you paid for Fabinho,
then
that's actually we've reacted to that situation a bit. It's been a bit of a mess in how we've got to it, but I'm quite pleased. I'd be quite pleased with that as a general thing. But
if
not done.
Gavin Birch for 20, was it 20 or 30 that's mil?
What Toby Altscheffel told me 20 last week.
Yeah, that is a steal. I don't even care if we don't need him. You go and that is daylight robbery. You just go and get that.
And the thing with that is, Chloe, it's always interrupted the fact we've liked him for like 18 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
20 mil for Ryan Gavin Birch, a talent who I thought was going to be a generational talent before he moved to Bayern Munich. He's not had his chance at Bayern Munich under Jurgen Klopp, it seems a no-brainer, and I know he's not your out-and-out DM. I think he can do a job there, and if you're interchanging it with Thiago, with Endo, with Gravenberch, and then in January you go and get the DM that you want and he moves further up the pitch, I cannot explain a midfield three that you're picking between of Gravenberch, Szoboszlai and McAllister when you've got Thiago on the bench, Endo somewhere in the mix, potentially an Andre or someone, you know, Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott. It is outrageous. So I'd love for us to go and get Gravenberch. No, I agree. I'd love Ducore. I'd really want Ducore. But I also think if we get Ducore, if we could just get the other 20 mil.
Exactly. That's the thing for me. Yeah. You're talking £70 million for Ducore. Yeah. I think that's about probably be us about done unless they find some clever little diddle to just get another body in defensively or whatever. And again, it comes back to it. There's clearly pathways and options. It feels to me like they're trying to box the midfield in the smartest way possible before, and then see what's left in the budget to work out how what else you can fix with that amount of money. Just we had a super chat from Matty Gorman who says FSG bought the club for 300 million since Jürgen. The valuation is 4 to 5 billion. Would it be too much of an ask to have a net spend proper rebuild of 250 to 300 million? I think Jürgen deserves that. I think people get a little lost on the net spend of it sometimes. Is that, you know, I just want us to make sure we bought enough the right players, and that'll come in due course. I thought this was the summer, by the way. I thought we were going to go big. I thought this was the summer to go big.
We did try. We just absolutely failed it beyond belief. Yeah. Back to Ryan Gravenberch, I totally take your point here, but if you get 20 mil for Ryan Gravenberch, I don't need to spend 250 exactly. to 300 mil because you're getting Ryan Gravenberch for 20. He's English technically for this 1 year, yeah, so you can worry about offloading people next year if needed. That still leaves one spot if you want the centre back.
Do you mean he's under 21?
Yes. He's technically still classing as me English player, so even though he's
Dutch. He just doesn't need registering, but
I'm still saying the English
he's not taking what you mean is he's not taking up one of your non-home spots because he's under 21.
But also on top of that, you can go and splurge on a centre back if the one you want, if you we need one, let's be honest. But it just I'd like Ducore, but if it doesn't also get us a centre back, and then we also feel like we need to do something in January, maybe it is that you don't spend as much right now, but you get boss footballers in who can do you the job until January, where you can improve it even more.
Anyone else want to add to that?
No, I agree with largely what everybody said. I think ultimately Liverpool are being reactive to a situation at the moment, and it's late in the transfer window and they're not going to be able to get the players out of the clubs that they thought they maybe could have got 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they're trying to make the best out of a bad situation. As far as the Super Chat goes, I'm struggling to see what the valuation does for anything.
He means that because they've made so much profit from it.
They haven't made any profit from it though, have they? They've not sold it.
But yeah, if they were selling now for that money, well, they that haven't, makes sense. But if they were, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then it would matter.
Yeah, it doesn't do now. It makes no difference whatsoever what the valuation of a football.
Do you think the investment might have played a part?
The investment should be a big fucking thing, but Manchester United have fucked that up, haven't they, for us? You know what I mean? It's like, they've not gone yet.
By the look of it.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So, listen, make no bones about it. What was the guy's name? Sorry.
Matty Gorman.
Matty. Liverpool have messed this up, yep. I think. Liverpool, I don't think, have spent what they had planned to spend in the areas they wanted to spend it. They are now making the best out of a bad situation, trying to find other ways to fix their other deficiencies in the squad with the money that they've got remaining. Mm-hmm. Because I think if we'd have signed Caicedo, we wouldn't have had anybody else come in, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that actually could have been a mistake as well. And it might have been a worse mistake. You just don't know. It's sliding doors.
And there's also a point of, like, you mentioned bringing Caicedo in. There's not another Caicedo on the market. I don't care what you say.
And I think that's what it comes down to sometimes. And it's where we've at least signed Endo, who looks a decent player. You've not bought someone who's injury prone, or, you know, then the loan thing where, but he's not being injury prone. He might develop to be injury prone, but he can't.
Do it again.
Up to this point, he hasn't been injury prone. That's true. That's a fact. And again, he's got lots of other bits and pieces that you're going for. And in terms of a short-term punt, I think you've done as well as you possibly could do there. It's whether it comes down to, do they look at, like, Jake Ducore and go, is he actually, for that money, is he worth, does he actually fulfill the brief of what we're looking for that? I don't know the answer to that one. And then again, are you better off spending your money elsewhere? I just hope that they do spend the money somewhere, because there are other needs in this squad. We either need a left side of centre half, or we need another right back, or something in between, or both, or whatever. There are other things you can do to move this on. If that midfielder, if we needed that defensive midfielder to be a Caicedo, a Lavia, plus a Ferbi, or whatever, we need a specific profile and we can't fulfil that, are we changing what we do? And then do we need to go and buy for that instead? And whatever, as long as there's some joined up thinking going on, I don't really care what shape it looks and how much it costs. But at the moment, we've got to finish spending on the midfield, and then he needs to decide what they're doing with that defence, because right now we're a man short in that in the defence, no matter which formation we play. If we play 3-box-3, it's left side of centre half. If we're sticking with 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 or whatever, it's right back, because, or centre back, because if Gomez is your right cover, then you're putting a lot on him and Trent.
Well, he's probably your right cover and your left cover, maybe, if you're left side of the centre half as well. Yeah. So, and we know Konate and Matip's injury hasn't been good enough for us. So, you need a right back, a right side of the centre half as well. So, yeah, the squad has been wholly mismanaged for a long time, I think, in terms of the right type of people and right type of bodies. We need to fix it.
I don't care how much we spend, as long as we get the right people and the right positions are filled by the end of summer. I honestly don't care how much we spend. It could be 5 million, it could be 500 million. I'm not bothered. As long as what I perceive to be the weaknesses aren't weaknesses by sort of September the 2nd, I'm not bothered. And for me right now, that remains another midfield option. One that can do different positions in there is fine by me. If you can play the 6, great. If you can play a bit of an 8 sound as well, I'm happy with that. Gravenberch or Andre both fulfill those. And I think for me, it will be the left side of centre back. I think that's our biggest glaring weakness right now. And just on the Decore, so I also spoke to Sammy Mochbel the other day on him, and we've all mentioned the fee. It is between 70 and 80 million, absolutely. And the problem we've got with him is the fact that whether Liverpool think he's worth it or not, the water's been muddied now by Declan Rice and Moises Caicedo for you. So Palace think he's worth it, simple as that. And that's what you've got to pay. You might return for him maybe next summer if you've sort of kicked the can down the road with an Endo, and he might not be 70, 80 million anymore because the market's changed.
It's
by
just
then.
Whether the worst thing, and we do this every other season, where we leave ourselves slightly on paper short in a particular position. When we're looking at it, you know, we did it with the left back thing. Milner did a full season there, and he was pretty good at it. We did it with the centre half, and it bit us in the arse big time. We did it midfield, and it bit us in the arse last season. I would feel really uncomfortable if we're saying it's all on Endo. But the thing is, it's not. You know, there are I think it's one of them where McAllister's done a good job, actually. But I don't want McAllister playing there. But maybe he tells you a little bit of something of, can you go and get someone who can do a bit of it? Just let McAllister play in the 8 and get someone else in who can do the 8-6 thing. That's why Gravenberch makes sense in that regard. But it might not be him, but someone else of that ilk does make a
sense. And one final point on the net spend, I suppose, addressing it from the comments. I think I'm right in saying that 115 for Caicedo and then maybe 105, give or take, for Szoboszlai and McAllister puts it at 220 with recouping about 50. We were looking at 170 million net spend anyway, if you want to look at that type of stuff, which is really un-Liverpool-like, by the way. Which I know it's not the 250 or 300 million, but Jesus wept, huge sums of money.
And it comes down
us.
To it, because we always get this with Arsenal spend loads of money and all this. And look, City do, because City are a law unto themselves, which we all know, which we shouldn't really be getting lost in. But, you know, Arsenal's wage bill's half of what Liverpool's is, because they're not at the top yet. So they've got room to manoeuvre in terms of how they do. Liverpool are having to maintain a squad full of the best players still some of the best players on the planet, whilst also adding to it. And so, their spend is a bit more complicated to follow than it is for certain other ones, but it sounds like I've defended it. I'm not. It just is what it is. Loads of super chats. Brett just says, up the Reds from Kansas City, Missouri in the US. Thank you so much, nice. Brett. Jaden Granville says, I need a holiday after the transfer window shuts. Honestly, I said this before, I really love the transfer window. I love it.
When
until...
did you go on holiday?
It's my favourite time of year.
Right over the closing of the transfer window.
Hater.
I love it until it gets to this point where it's just a constant swinging of reactions, like bipolar, from everything's incredible to everything's totally fucked. And it's never really ever like that, because while it's, yeah, I'm talking about you, Chloe.
I'm just
it was the fact that, like, half one in the morning on a random Friday, I was possibly the happiest I've ever been in my life, and then by 10 a.m. I was the most depressed I've ever been. It was incredible.
And you'd had about 45 minutes sleep in between that as well.
To Joe says, if we got to Corey Gravenberch to go with Slobby Eye and Macca, that could be just as good as Gerrard, Zabby and Mascano. Yep, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. The bipolar nature of it is what it is. You can't... I just saw so many people who read the Pierce headline as... They interpreted it as Liverpool aren't buying any more footballers, which is not what he said. And it might be what happens, but that's not what he said. So if you're going to react to something, like, react to what's actually been said. And then if we don't sign anyone, then react to that when it closes. But again, as I said, then Liverpool, if they're Liverpool are boss without it, react to that and let it go. But yeah. Feel your feelings, however you want to feel them, ultimately. I don't feel them quite as acutely as people on social media seem to, but there you go. Right, cool, quality, that is that for now. There'll be more, I'm sure. Dan, before we go, just, you've hinted at all these boss shows you've done, but if you can cast your mind back, because there's so many.
Good Lord. Konstantin Ecker, Bundesliga commentator last week on Endo, Lewis Ambos, Opta analyst on Endo as well, Dan Orlowitz, Japan Times journalist on Endo, and then tomorrow I've got Kevin Hatchard on Ryan Gravenberg. That'd be always fun. He's brilliant, Kevin. Sammy Mockbell on Jack DeCore. Sammy Mockbell's the man when it comes to London news. So yeah, all that stuff.
Brilliant. That's all on redmenplus.com.
I did a deep dive.
You did a deep dive.
Just one deep dive. I feel like I've done my money's worth this week. I'm not quite putting the quantity of a Dan, nor the quality, to be fair, but
yeah,
you know, well done. I'm still here.
Is that on YouTube?
Bunching. Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Cool,
baby.
Cool. So on redmenplus.com, there's Dan's all his extra shows. So if you want to get closer,
deep dive on Redmen Plus.
All of those transfers, then go to redmenplus.com. If you use the code ENDO, you get 50% off a captain yearly subscription. So get a full year of Redmen Plus for 50% off. Fill your boots on all the transfer news, ins and outs, tactics, analysis, insight, and there's a ton of documentaries and interviews on there as well to keep you happy in the meantime.
When's the code run till?
I want it to run to, basically, we discovered at this point. But yeah, get it done quickly, because Steve's desperate to turn it off, and I've fought tooth and nail to get it extended another day, so don't let
you
me
miss an opportunity there, buddy, because when does it endo?
Yeah, I know.
It was the absolute obvious
end
thing to
the
say.
Show, no.
Endo the show.
I'm so bored of it.
Right, thank you so much for watching and for listening to the Red Men Originals podcast. If you are live here with us, come and join us for the Bias Transfer podcast over on redmenplus.com right now.
Can you talk about Everton?
At Caicedo and Everton and more. So yeah, see us over there. Ta-da.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.